Joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Martha Obear and Flo Inhern, who are both with the Louisiana Orphan Train Society. Martha Obear is the vice president of LOTS, the Louisiana Orphan Train Society, and Flo Inhern is the historian and has actually been doing a lot of work longer than the society, I think, has been around. I think there are many people in our audience who have heard the phrase Louisiana Orphan Train, or are aware from documentaries, have heard about those trains that left New York City and came through the western part and southern parts of the country with orphans from New York City. But just to kind of let people know, give us a background, and Flo, you may be able to do that. What happened in New York that these orphan trains were sent out?
Well, the children were orphans because of the great influx of immigrants. It was right after the Civil War, and then the influx of the Irish potato famine. All the immigrants were coming in, and of course from other parts of the European country. And once they got to America, to the land of opportunity, there was no jobs, no housing. And if a parent died, there was a law at that time in New York where the children were taken away from the parents and put in orphanages. So that's why they had so many children on the streets.
In addition to, I guess, disease.
And diseases, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. What was very prevalent at that time was the Asiatic cholera. And so many of the parents were dying. Mm-hmm. Some had died at sea. Mm-hmm. Some delivered babies after they arrived. And then the bigger children, there was no, because of no housing, went to the streets. They slept on the sidewalks, under stairwells, and wherever they could find.
Mm-hmm. So what years are we talking about? Like after the Civil War?
From 1854. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this period of hardship lasted through 1929.
Mm-hmm. And why were the orphan trains sent out? What were there societies that became concerned with the problem? What happened to create this movement to send children into the countries?
It was first created by Reverend Loring Brace, who was a Methodist minister. And he was originally from Connecticut, from Hartford, Connecticut. And he never had a church. He never left New York. And he was appalled at seeing all these young boys and girls on the streets. So he decided to build an almshouse and would invite them to come in and take a bath for a nickel or a dime and get a plate of food, a place to sleep. And the next morning they were back on the street. And they were like gangs, and they were called waifs and street Arabs. And they would sell matchsticks, rags, newspapers, shine shoes, anything to survive, and also steal, if they could, steal vegetables or fruits off of the carts that went down the street selling their ware.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so how did the trains come into this?
So then, when they started laying the rails out west, he built a farm. And he would ask the boys and girls to come work on the farm to train them. And then they laid the rails to go out west. And he invited them, would they like to go out west in an open country and have a lot of fruits and vegetables and, you know, a better life? And of course they accepted. So he began sending agents out, and they would put posters up railway stations or in opera houses and invite the community to come and pick a boy or a girl. And so that went on for a while. And in the meantime, with all this Asiatic cholera that was going on, this young New York socialite by the name of Mary Irene Fitzgibbon contacted the Asiatic cholera, and she was in a coma. And according to the story, she had a vision of little children, and she promised God if he would let her live, she would devote the rest of her life in his service. She lived. She joined the Sisters of Charity. And when she took her last vow, she went to the Mother Superior and asked to open up an orphanage for all the little babies that were being abandoned on the street. And they had no money, of course. And she gave a $5 bill and sent her on her way with Sister McChrystal. And the first orphanage they opened was in Greenwich Village. But because she had been a New York socialite, she knew all the big ladies of the city that had money, and they assisted her. By nightfall of that first day, there was a baby on the step. At the end of 1 year, that building was filled. And they moved three times. They built one huge facility, which is no longer in existence, where they trained nurses in the hospital and took care of the babies. But she didn't approve of the way he handled the train movement, because he would just send agents. She decided that it had to be done through the bishops and the parish priests, and that these children had to be indentured. So that's how the process worked. So they put them on the parents, first of all, applied for children, either a boy or a girl, and some took as many as two. And once they arrived, they had a tag number, and the parent that was waiting for that child had the matching number, and they would call out the names and the numbers, and they matched the children that way.
Mm. I want to tell people who may just be tuning in wondering what we're talking about right now. My guests are with the Louisiana Orphan Train Society. Flo Inhern, who is speaking, is the historian of the society. Also with us is Martha Aubert, who is the vice president of LOTS. And they're here talking about the society, and we'll be talking about the museum that has been set up in Opelousas to commemorate and celebrate the descendants of these orphans. So the orphans you're talking about who came to Louisiana were a part of this later wave where they had people waiting for them?
Okay, they here in Louisiana, the first trains to arrive to our knowledge was in 1907. We had three trains that came through. And each train, of course, they disembarked children all in all the states all the way, you know. But they came through Hammond, New Orleans, Lafayette, and Opelousas into Avoyelles Parish, and each train car had 52 to 53 children, and they were escorted with an agent, a nun, and nurses, and the bigger children took care of the smaller children. But they had, the ages were from 2 to 3. And they had a few that were 5 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And that continued for a while. And then after that, whenever the children were placed with the families, most of the time they had to go to either Lafayette or New Orleans to pick them up.
So for a while they were coming through all the small communities,
right.
But then it ended up they would just stop in the major communities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when was the last train that came to Louisiana?
Well, the train movement stopped in 1929. I don't know what year the last train came to to Louisiana.
But the nationwide
train movement stopped. Yeah. They had a law passed where they could no longer transport children by rails.
Mm-hmm. Across state lines.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess people are wondering how the two of you got involved in this society. It seems like most of the people in the organization on the board have some connection with those who came on those trains. Martha, you're the vice president of the society. How did you get involved?
I got involved within the last 5 years. And I am a descendant also of an orphan train rider. My grandmother's name was Emily Kingsley, and she was left at the New York Foundling Hospital when she was 3 weeks old by her mother, Kate Kingsley, and I knew my grandmother very well. She did not come on the train to Opelousas. She went to Bayou Black community by Houma. I lived with her for 6 years in New Orleans. She lived in a historical section in Algiers Point, and I knew she was an orphan train rider, mm-hmm. but there was very little spoken about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was so young, too, wasn't she, when she came?
She was born in 1903, and she came as well on a 1907 train. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing, and I don't know where she got off, but I was guessing New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was a big stigma that these children carried their entire lives being an orphan train rider. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was never that much passed on to me about it.
It wasn't particularly a point of pride.
Correct.
Or, yeah.
And so it was very little talked about. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got connected to all this. And we have a wonderful board who volunteers so much time to the Louisiana Orphan Train Society, which helps us in turn run the Louisiana Orphan Train Museum.
Mm-hmm. Flo, how are you connected?
I married the son of an orphan train rider. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law, Aloysius N. Hearn, Sr., was the orphan train rider. And he was Irish, and his mother was Mary Brown. And he was 3 weeks old when she brought him to the foundling. And we have a document where she states her name and gives his name and signs it. It's the only document that we have so far in our possession in the museum signed by a mother. Mm. So I married into an orphan train rider's family.
And where did your father-in-law, he rode the train to Opelousas?
To Opelousas, mm-hmm. and he was raised in the little community that they called Undrepont, which is between Ville Platte and Opelousas.
And how old was he when he
arrived? Was 3 years old. And the couple who took him in had no children. They had been married for a good while and had no children. And by the grace of God, she had 5 sons later on in life. So that was a wonderful thing she did. You know, God mm-hmm. graced her with a family.
Mm-hmm. He was kind of the catalyst.
Yes.
Did he ever speak of any memories of the train ride?
He didn't remember. He was too young. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he loved his foster mother. Mm-hmm. And she loved him, too. But he always had the desire to know the name of a mother.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you all find this document? Did it come with him or?
No. Mm-hmm. My son went to New York and visited the foundling hospital. And then we continued to write. And one day we received this document. And we received it the day before he died, before Mr. Inhern died. He was in a coma. And we knew that he could not speak, but we read the document to him, and the tears rolled down his cheek. So I said, well, he went to heaven knowing the name of a mother.
That's amazing that they were able to get that document to you all after all those years.
All these years, mm-hmm. right. And it happened at the right time. Mm-hmm. It happened at the
Now, you've been documenting the orphan train movement for a long time, 23 years now. How did you get started doing research on it?
We had a gathering. First of all, in 1990, Mary Ellen Johnson from Springdale, Arkansas, who got involved with the orphan train movement by going to the library to do a thesis, and somebody suggested this to her. She had never heard of it, so she became very curious in the 1980s. And in 1990, she decided, well, she's going to go to different states and find out more about this. And she came to Lafayette in 1990. We had a gathering. And then in 91, we had the first gathering in Opelousas, and there were quite a few of the orphan train riders that were still living. And I started interviewing them because I wanted to know more.
So you've been collecting interviews with them, their experiences and memories.
What I could get from them. Mm-hmm. And now, well, I'm searching for the connections with the foster parents and where they were lived and where they buried, and I want to know the whole thing.
Kind of making a map for them and for the descendants.
Right.
So when did the Louisiana Orphan Train Society, when did you all formally start?
In 2003, but we were a committee before. Mm-hmm. And we still, all the same people from the committee down to...
Created this society.
Right.
So are there members from around the state, or you're primarily located in Opelousas?
We're primarily around this area.
Now, are there other societies in the state who have formed, or is there just really such an interest in the Opelousas?
There's another museum in Kansas.
Okay.
In Concordia.
But in Louisiana, that's the only museum.
Oh, yeah, in Louisiana. We're the second museum in the United States.
Wow. So much interest and emotion, obviously, centered in your area.
Right.
About how many children were placed in Louisiana?
They estimate around 2,000, but I don't know that that's mm-hmm. right. But we have over 300 in our files.
300 who were placed in Louisiana or in the Opelousas area?
In Louisiana.
In Louisiana.
Yeah.
And so these are people, you know their names.
I have
you know
their names.
Their foster families.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't have connections with everyone yet, mm-hmm. but every week you find a connection, mm-hmm. every week.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm speaking with members of the Louisiana Orphan Train Society. Flo Inhern is the historian and has been working for 23 years now, making these connections and interviewing some of the Orphan Train riders themselves and their descendants. And Martha Aubert is the vice president of the society. There is a museum that is in Opelousas. People can actually go to this museum. When did you all open the museum? Martha?
We opened the museum in October of 2009, and it's a 24-square-foot building. It's from the original train station in Opelousas, but is not the actual depot building. It was actually a storage building, and that has been renovated. We're located in the Vieux Village Tourist Welcome Center in historic downtown Opelousas. So when you come into the Vieux Village, we're in the yellow building in the back, and we're always interested in having anybody come by. We do always look for connections, like Flo was saying. We want to find other descendants, get the stories of their ancestors, and spread the word. If you would be going from Lafayette to Opelousas, you would go I-49 north, and you would take the 190 west exit, and that'll bring you right into the Vieux Village Welcome Tourist Center. Mm-hmm.
So the building itself is made out of a structure that was in the train station when these children arrived.
Correct. It's mm-hmm. a renovated building, and that's where we house our artifacts. We have a lot of resources there for people who want to come in, if they're connected or not, or just interested, period. Mm-hmm. We're happy to give them tours. You know, we're open from Tuesday through Saturday, Tuesday to Friday, 10 to 3 p.m., and Saturday, 10 to 2.
You also have a website. I was on your website, and you have some of that information there.
We do. It's www.laorphantrain.com, and we do have information on there. And we also have a YouTube video. If you just search Louisiana Orphan Train Museum, it'll come up. Mm-hmm. And we're always trying to encourage the younger generation to come see us. We really love when the school groups come. From anywhere from elementary age to high school to college, we've had them all. Mm-hmm. And in the future, we want the younger generation to be able to pass on this wonderful part of Louisiana history.
Well, and for some of them to find out about their past, you know, as you said, your grandmother really didn't talk much about that.
Correct.
And there are probably many stories like that.
Yes, there are.
So this makes people feel more open about discussing it and finding those connections.
Definitely, Judith. That's mm-hmm. correct.
Well, Flo, I'm sure people listening have all kinds of questions about the stories that you've heard from some of the train riders, because so many of them were still alive when you began, you know, recording your stories. I'm sure some people are wondering, I guess, what leaps to your mind first is obviously many people were very welcoming, like your father-in-law's family.
Right.
Did you ever hear any stories that weren't so welcoming, anyone who had a difficult experience?
Not too many.
Mm-hmm.
There were some, but not too many. We as far as I know, we had one rider that was mistreated, so the family says now, and he was removed from this family and placed with another family, and and then he was okay.
So for the most part, the stories that you're hearing are
very good, and they were well-educated, those that had means. But, you know, during those days, a sixth-grade education was a great education. You know, if you graduated in the sixth grade, you had really accomplished something. Because most of the country people went to a one-room schoolhouse. So,
did you hear any stories? And these children were all from New York, some Irish immigrant children, I'm sure other immigrant groups. Did some of them have to learn French to live with their new families?
Oh, yes, a lot of them, especially, you know, in Evangeline and St. Landry Parish, because that's big old French communities. Yes, they had to learn to speak French. And then once they went to school, they had to learn English all over again. And that was not, French was not permitted in school during those days.
So you heard a lot of those stories. Do they remember having to learn French?
Right. They had to learn French.
Now, that would be a fascinating thing. I'm sure many people are interested in these days about that language acquisition, you know.
My mother went to a one-room schoolhouse, and she had one of the little children that was one of the orphans. And she used to tell me, I knew about her, that they would pick at her. They would call them little Yankees. Or you're not loved. Your mother threw you away like a cat. You know, there was bullying during those days, too.
Even then.
Right. And so Mom said she took this child under her wing. And when I went to school, one of her sons was my classmate. So it was a small world.
Your mother had helped his. Well, that's interesting. So they would be saying these things in French.
Yes.
Probably to this poor little girl.
Right.
Right. Well, we think things are new, but they aren't.
No.
Well, how many interviews do you have recorded? Did you write them? Did you record them?
Well, we have a lot of stuff written. There's not too much recorded. And we're in the process of doing a book, and it'll be like one genealogy sheet. You know,
so for each child
For each
that
child
came.
That came.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think in the museum you also have photographs of some of the children.
Many.
So you have a lot of photographs from when the children arrived, some of their early photographs.
We have both. You know, if we were able to get a picture when they were small and when they were adults, that's incorporated together. And with their names, including their New York name, who raised them, and the date they were born, the date they died, and what community they were raised in.
And you have those photographs on display in the museum.
Yes, the Wall of Fame.
Well, again, if you are wondering about this fascinating subject, this is the Louisiana Orphan Train Society. Two of the members are here with me, Flo Inhern and Martha Auber. The museum is in Opelousas in the Vieux Village, the historic district, and anyone can visit it, individuals, groups. Their website is laorphantrain.com. You can stop by there, and the hours, I believe, and location are on that website as well.
Also, Judith, we have original clothing of what some of the orphans wore when they got to their destination. And the clothing that's in the museum is the clothing that the sisters put on the child.
That must have been very precious to many of the families when they got the children to save those little clothes.
Correct. And the sisters made the clothing. And I discovered Emily, my grandmother's clothing, about 3 months before the museum opened. As early I was telling you, these children had a stigma of how they were, you know, rejected and abandoned for whatever reasons.
Well, as Flo was saying, how they were teased in the schoolyard.
Correct. So, and I was able to find Emily's clothes in her home in New Orleans. She literally had it tucked away in a cedar chest and had told no one about it. Mm-hmm. So I was able to find the original tag number, and on the front of the hem of her little dress was the hand-sewn cloth that the sisters wrote of the New York name, where they were going, and the foster parents' name.
So they wrote that in the clothes?
They wrote it on mm-hmm. the clothes. So there were two systems of tagging the child, mm-hmm. a number tag and a cloth tag. So, yes, that it is very special to us, and it's very special to our visitors mm-hmm. when they're able to come and see the actual clothes the children had. And we have several articles of clothing.
Mm-hmm. That are on display.
That are on display.
Well, again, lots of questions I'm sure people have, but it sounds like you welcome people coming and asking you these questions, and you hope that people will find out more about this part of our history.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. We would love to see them.
Yeah. So is there somebody there during the regular hours, someone from the society who can answer questions? Are you often there, Flo?
I work on Wednesdays.
Okay. I'm sure some people are wondering about that.
And again, I work on Tuesdays. Okay. So we're all descendants. Mm-hmm. We run the museum, so everyone there is a descendant. It mm-hmm. has a connection.
Right. I run the office from my home. I have duplicate files of everything that's in the museum is in my home. That's where I started.
Well,
and I continue to do that. Mm-hmm. So I can be reached there in my home. 24/7.
All right. Well, they probably have that information at the museum as well. Again, Martha Aubert, who is the vice president of the Louisiana Orphan Train Society. Flo Inhern is the historian. The museum is in Opelousas, and that website for further information is laorphantrain.com. If you have questions, you can email them, call them, or stop by the museum. If you have stories, if you realize that you're a part of that history, certainly they're eager to hear your stories as well. Well, thank you all so much for coming by to let us know more about the subject, and we hope to have you back in the future, particularly as the book gets closer, and we can ask you more about the book.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Judith.
Oh, we're so happy to come.
Yes. We're so happy to hear your information.
Thank you very much.